WMFO, Medford. Distance telephone calls, and library books. There is no due date, tolls, or expiration in the grand hour. Today is the 14th of November. It's supposed to be colder when I leave the studio than when I arrived. This is a radio first for me. So I put my playlist on disc, and it's so cold the disc is broken, so my whole double feature for this morning is unavailable to me, so I have to dig in my bag and pull out my backup show. I believe this was originally done in February of 1940. Anybody who's anybody should recognize this adventure series. It's ingrained in pop culture. One thing that a lot of folks don't recall is that when Kyle, whatever his name is, crashed to Earth, he crashed down in Kansas. So without further ado, I'm going to play Radio Adventure number one from The Adventures of Superman. Again, my apologies. I had a six-shooter lined up for the first half of the bill, but my CD is broken. Try and enjoy Superman.
Boys and girls, your attention, please. Presenting a new exciting radio program featuring the thrilling adventures of an amazing and incredible personality. Faster than an airplane, more powerful than a locomotive, impervious to bullets.
Up in the sky, look, it's a giant bird.
It's a plane.
It's Superman.
Now, Superman, a being no larger than an ordinary man, but possessed of powers and abilities never before realized on Earth. Able to leap into the air an eighth of a mile at a single bound, hurdle a 20-story building with ease, race a high-powered bullet to its target, lift tremendous weights and rend solid steel in his bare hands as though it were paper. Superman, a strange visitor from a distant planet, champion of the oppressed, physical marvel extraordinary, who has sworn to devote his existence on Earth to helping those in need. As our story begins, we ask you to come with us on a far journey, a journey that takes us millions of miles from the Earth, where the planet Krypton burns like a green star in the endless heavens. Here, civilization is far advanced. It has brought forth a race of supermen, men and women like ourselves, but advanced to the absolute peak of human perfection. As we near Krypton, we see high walls and gleaming turrets. We approach the magnificent Temple of Wisdom, and there in a great hall, Jor-El, Krypton's foremost man of science, is about to address a meeting of the planet's governing council.
Attention! Attention, gentlemen! Jor-El speaks. Members of the council, I have completed my solar calculations, and much as I dread uttering these words, I have come to the conclusion Krypton is doomed.
Did I hear him right?
Gentlemen! Gentlemen! Gentlemen, hear him all. These internal quakes we've been experiencing, these volcanic eruptions, tidal waves, gas escaping from giant craters, all point to only one thing, gentlemen. Krypton is utterly and finally doomed.
Why, the man's mad. He's absolutely
mad. One moment, gentlemen. One moment. There is no cause for anxiety. I am certain Jor-El has made a mistake. True, we have had a few minor quakes and eruptions, but nothing very serious. There must be some error in your calculations, Jor-El.
No, no, there is no error, Ozan. I only wish there were. The sun is gradually drawing Krypton closer to it. Within a month, possibly only a week, the gravitational pull will be so tremendous that Krypton will not be able to weather the strain. And then our planet will explode like a giant bubble, destroying every living thing on it.
Gentlemen, assuming for the moment, Jor-El, that what you say is true, how are we to avoid it? What can we do to stop it?
There is only one way. As you all know, I have been working on a spaceship designed for interplanetary travel. With time and united effort, we might transport the entire population of Krypton to another world.
Impossible. Where would we go?
To the Earth. My studies tell me the atmosphere of the Earth is very nearly the same as our own.
You have been working too hard, Jor-El. You need a rest. Believe me, we have the utmost respect for your knowledge and integrity, but this is carrying it too far. Planets as large as Krypton do not explode, Jor-El.
Wait! Do you hear that, gentlemen? It's the forewarning of doom! Every moment is precious now! Quakes like that are sounding the death knell of Krypton. It will happen, gentlemen, and happen soon. When the last great eruption comes...
When it comes, Jor-El, it shall find all of us ready. If Krypton is to die, we shall die with it. The parting would be much too severe.
Yes. Very well. Good afternoon, like Roseanne, and you members of the council. I have no time to laugh. My wife, Lara, and my infant son are dear to me. It is not my wish to stand by and see them destroyed. Laugh, all of you. But a time will come, and that time is perhaps very close at hand, when you will wish you had heeded the words of Jor-El. Now you think me a fool. But remember what I have said, gentlemen, when Krypton is shattered into 1,000,000,000 stars, when the glorious civilization we have built is no more, when you and your families are swept from the face of Krypton like dust!
Order, gentlemen! Order! You have heard Jor-El speak. Is it your wish that we devote time and money to the building of spaceships for the transportation of Krypton's population to another planet?
No!
I'm sorry, Jor-El. The Council has spoken.
Yes, and signed the death warrants of every living thing on Krypton. Well, I have done my best to convince you. Now all that remains for me is to proceed with my own means of salvation, my own spaceship, to save the lives of those near and dear to me. As for the rest of you, may the gods have mercy on your souls.
Jor-El is mad. He is absolutely mad.
Lara, I didn't see you.
I came out to take the air on the terrace. It's been terribly hot all day. Is that because we're being drawn to the sun, Jor-El?
Yes.
What did the council have to say about that?
I didn't mention it.
Is the model of your spaceship almost finished?
Yes, I just drove the last rivet. How does it look?
Splendid. But will it work?
That remains to be seen. If it does work, I shall immediately begin construction of another just like it, only much larger. One big enough to carry all three of us to another world.
Jor-El, when will that be? Every moment that we spend waiting and wondering...
Yes, I know, Lara. It's been hard on all of us, and particularly hard on you. How is the boy?
Sleeping, Jor-El. That quake this afternoon frightened him. But he's all right now. Can't you come in and look at him? You scarcely see him these days, what with working all hours on the spaceship model.
It can't be helped, dear. I'm racing against time. Right now, I'm anxious to know whether the model will behave as I hope.
How does it operate?
Very simply. When all is ready, I throw this switch. That closes the circuit, and electric energy builds up pressure in the atomic generators. Then, at the final moment, the pressure forces the ship from its carrier and speeds it on its way.
But where does it go?
Wherever it's pointed. This one I'm directing to the planet Earth.
Earth? What is that, Jerome?
A planet smaller than our own, situated on the other side of the sun. It's inhabited by a race of people similar to ourselves.
Like ourselves?
Well, only partly, of course, my dear. They're about the same size, but nowhere nearly as developed. Very weak and helpless, and with all their faculties extremely limited.
How do you mean?
Well, I haven't time to go into detailed explanation now, Lara, but it's something like this. You know how far you step when you want to go somewhere?
Practically as far as I want. Why, one step takes me to Bratta's house near the fountain.
Exactly. Well, down where I'm sending this spaceship, it's quite different. An Earthman steps only 3 feet at a time at most, and everything else is in proportion.
And that's where we're going? Oh, how dreadful.
My dear, which would you rather do? Go to Earth and live, or stay on Krypton and die?
I'll do anything you say, Jor-El, anything. It doesn't matter to me whether we live or die as long as we're together. It's only the boy I worry about.
Yes, I know. Oh, Lara, darling, don't worry. He'll be saved.
When are you testing the spaceship model?
In the morning. Just as dawn breaks, I'll send it on its way, watching its flight through a high-powered telescope to see whether it lands safely on Earth.
Is Earth the only planet place we can go to, Jor-El?
We couldn't breathe on any other planet but the Earth. It happens to have an atmosphere similar to Krypton's.
I suppose you know best, Jor-El. Are you coming in? It seems to have gotten oppressively hot.
Yes, it has. I wonder. Lara, do you hear that?
Yes, Jor-El. What is it?
Subterranean explosions. Do you feel the ground trembling?
Yes, I do. Jor-El, do you think?
Lara. Lara, I'm afraid it's come. Where is the boy, Kal-El?
What do you mean?
Get him quickly. This is the end.
Jor-El, what can we do?
Nothing, nothing. I'm not ready. Oh, what a fool I've been to delay.
It isn't your fault, Jor-El. You did all you could.
If only this model were large enough, we could take a chance.
Jor-El, would it carry one of us safely to Earth?
Oh, I think so, but Lara, where are you going? Stay here with me.
I'm getting Kal-El. If one of us can be saved, Jor-El, it should be the boy.
No, no, Lara, come back. If one must go, it should be you. Lara, I said come back. Come back.
Here he is, Jor-El, still asleep. Goodbye, Kal-El.
Please, Lara.
No, Jor-El, listen to me. We both stay here. Kal-El goes in the spaceship. If there is a chance, Jor-El, one little chance I wanted for my son.
Maybe you're right, Lara.
Jor-El, look. The sky. It's fiery red. The mountains. Look, the mountains are falling in. Jor-El, what's happening?
The end of Krypton, Lara. Just as I foretold. This is the last great quake.
Jor-El. Listen, explosions.
Here, quick, give me the boy.
Kal-El. What are you doing, Jor-El?
Opening the door, putting him inside.
Jor-El, the house, it's swaying. It's breaking apart. Look, Jor-El.
There, he's safe inside. Now for the switch. Stand back, Lara.
Oh, Jor-El, will he reach the Earth?
Only the gods know. But there's a chance, the only chance. Stand back now, Lara. I'm going to throw the switch.
Jor-El. It's getting dark. I can't see. What happened?
Fire. Smoke from the center of the planet. Not much time now.
Hold me, Jor-El. Has the spaceship gone?
No, not yet. Waiting for pressure. We may have been too late. If it doesn't work up soon, wait. Lara, it's off. It's on its way.
Jor-El, where are you?
Here, beside you, Lara. Listen, can you hear me? Our boy, Kal-El. Our son, Lara. He's on his way. On his way to Earth.
Kal-El! Kal-El!
So the tiny rocket ship roars into the uncharted heavens as the mighty planet of Krypton explodes into millions of glowing fragments, glittering stars to remain forever in the night sky. Jor-El and Lara, devoted parents of the tiny boy, perish in the giant quake that destroys Krypton. But what of the rocket ship? Does it reach the Earth? Does it find its mark in all the far-flung darkness of space? Remember, don't miss the next installment of Superman.
Up in the sky! Look! It's a giant plane!
It's a plane!
It's Superman!
Superman is a copyrighted feature appearing in Action Comics magazine.
From what I understand, when Superman debuted, it was in 15-minute installations, serialized, about February 1940. I believe the comic was developed in 1937 or 38, originally, and then appeared in newspapers as a comic strip before finally becoming a radio drama. I'm going to go ahead and play the flip side of this record. This is Arthur listening to the Grand Hour. And a programming note, it's so cold, my CD broke, so I'm not able to play a double billing of Gunsmoke and the Six Shooter. So I'm playing auxiliary shows that I have in my bag, which this morning is going to be Superman.
FO annual drive is in effect. We're looking to raise $5,000 to continue to keep your freeform station playing your favorite music. WMFO is a nonprofit station with staff, students, and community members who volunteer their time to bring you their favorite music and shows. We need your support to keep it all running, so donate now by logging on to donate.wmfo.org. That's donate.wmfo.org. Or mail a check payable to trustees of Tufts College. Send it to WMFO, P.O. Box 65, Medford, Massachusetts, 02155. Thank you for your support from all of us here at your freeform station, 91.5 WMFO.
Yes, the donation drive is in effect. Send anything, be greatly appreciated. So I'm gonna play the flip side of this record. Superman, it says radio broadcast number 2. I hope it's in sequential order. Thanks.
Superman! Up in the sky! Look! It's a bird!
It's a plane!
It's Superman! And now, Superman, eighth wonder of the modern world. Visitor from a distant planet whose strength knows no limits, whose endurance is beyond anything humanity has ever known. We have seen how the child of Jor-El and Lara was placed in the rocket ship and sent on his way to Earth. During the long journey of the rocket ship to the Earth, the child has become a man. The rocket landed in a desert. Superman stepped forth full grown to explore this strange new world in which he found himself. Today, as our story continues, we find him hovering with his curious power above a quiet highway in Indiana. A trolley car is just pulling up the hill, and as Superman wheels and turns in curious flight, unseen below, a man and a boy come out of the shed that serves as waiting room.
Morning, Professor.
Good morning.
Going into town?
Yes, that's right, John. Taking Jimmy to the fair.
Tis a great show, all right. Well, I reckon you're my only passengers. Make yourselves at home. I'm going to get me a drink of water.
All right.
Why, Dad, we've got the trolley all to ourselves.
Yes, regular private car.
Where the motorman go?
And just over to the spring for a drink. It's a mighty hot day.
He'd better hurry or we'll be late.
We can't start without the motorman.
But we are starting. Look, Dad. The doors have closed. We're moving.
Yes, what happened?
Dad, I want to get out.
The brakes. Something happened to the brakes.
Let's get out, quick. Open the doors.
They're jammed. They're tight shut.
Dad, we're going faster and faster. We're going downhill. Dad, what are we going to do?
Jimmy, come here.
The window. Out the window, Dad. Get it open. Smash it.
Oh, wait.
Jump, Dad. Jump.
No. It's too late. Going too fast.
We've got to, Dad. Look, there ahead. There's a tree.
Jimmy.
A tree. A tree falling right in the tracks.
Look. There in the sky. It's a man.
Why, he's flying.
It can't be. It's not possible.
Dad, he's coming straight at us. He's swooping down. He's staring off the roof. Dad.
Quick. Grab hold of me.
No, put me down. Let me go.
Stop it.
One under each arm. Out through the top. Hold on. We're going to crash. Well, we just got out of that in time. Trolley car's a wreck. Smashed into a million pieces.
Where are you going? What are you doing to us?
What's happening? Put us down.
Don't be frightened. You're all right. I had to get you out of there in a hurry. Pulling off that roof was the only way. Now we're going down again. Down. Down. There you are. Safe and sound in a field.
Well, I don't know what to say.
Quite all right, Professor. Getting you and the boy out of that car was nothing.
I can't believe it.
Who are you, anyway? Where do you come from?
I have no name. I come from a world that no longer exists. Here in this world of yours, men would call me a Superman.
It's a dream. A wild, impossible dream.
But, Dad, it happened. We saw it. He flew down, took us under his arms.
And out of the car, that's all. Nothing so strange about that.
You saved our lives, Jimmy's and mine. I don't understand even now, but I'm grateful.
Are you, Professor?
Well, do you doubt it?
Would you do something to prove it?
Would we? Anything at all.
Then make me a promise. Promise that you'll say nothing at all about what's happened.
What? Don't you want people to know?
Not just yet. I want no one to know, except those I help. Will you promise?
Well, if you wish.
I do, believe me.
Then you have our word. Is that all?
No. You've given me your promise. Now I want your advice.
You want advice from us?
You know this world. I'm a stranger. You know the people in it. And I have still to find them out.
You want to meet men, is that it?
Not meet them, Professor. Observe them. Study them. See them at their best and their worst. Know which to help and when help is needed. If you can tell me that.
Dad, can we help him?
Well, I think so, Jimmy. If that's what he wants.
It would mean a great deal to me.
Well, my friend, if we can call you that.
I hope we can.
My first friends on this earth.
To mingle with people, to see men at the highest and the lowest, if that's what you want. Now, let me think. Now, how about a newspaper, a great metropolitan daily?
A newspaper?
Well, yes, join their staff. Be a reporter.
Oh, but you can't do it in those clothes. Not that blue costume with the cloak and shield on your breast. Gee, you couldn't.
Jimmy, these are the cloak and the shield of Superman. If I become as other men, I shall dress as other men.
Well, you'll have to assume some kind of a name. What do they call you?
I have no name.
Well, how about Clark Kent? That sounds all right.
Yes, why not? It's usual enough. Won't attract attention.
Clark Kent. Clark Kent, yes. And about joining a newspaper. That should give me an opportunity to learn the troubles of men, to know whom to help and when help is needed. I'll do it. Many thanks to both of you for your advice.
Well, no thanks are necessary. If there were only something more...
Just this. Remember your promise. Never to reveal my identity. And now, goodbye. I've stayed too long, and I'm off. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Goodbye.
They're right. Superman must become a reporter. A reporter by the name of Clark Kent. Clark Kent. I'll do it.
City room. White.
Listen, Chief. You better get somebody on that railroad story right away.
Anything break?
Looks bad. I don't know where your dope came from, but it sure was right.
Well, where are you now?
At the yards out of town. If I were you, I'd have somebody watch the man they call the Wolf.
The Wolf?
That's what I do, Chief. Watch him. Trail him. Follow him every minute. He's at the bottom of this as sure as you're born. Now, hey, I gotta beat it. Someone's coming. So long.
Excuse me, Mr. White. That young man's still waiting.
What young man? Oh, the one who wants a job? Well, let him wait. Who have we got that's free?
McCann's on the coast. Grayson's down in Virginia. Most of the day men are full up.
I knew it. Confound, it's always the way. Something breaks and nobody to handle it.
What is it, Mr. White?
Railroads. Sabotage. I didn't believe it, but there may be something in it after all. If there is...
Yes, sir?
If there is, Miss Smith, it'll be the biggest story since Lindbergh. And me short-handed. Oh, what's the use?
Yes, sir. About that man.
Oh, send him in.
Yes, sir. Come in, Mr. Kent. Mr. White will see you now.
Thank you. You want to see me? Close that door.
Yes, sir. My name is Kent, Clark Kent.
What can I do for you, Mr. Kent?
Well, Mr. White, you can give me work, I hope.
Work? On the paper?
Yes, sir. I'd like to be a reporter.
Oh, you'd like to be a reporter. What papers have you worked on?
Well, none, sir, but
no, you haven't. But you think you'd be a whiz. Well, I'm afraid I can't use you, Kent.
You mean you haven't any openings?
Not for greenhorns. I'm sorry if I'm blunt.
But, Mr. White, even if I am a greenhorn, suppose I brought you a good story.
And where would you get it? I'm afraid you'll have to excuse me, Mr. Kent.
A really good story?
Such as?
Such as the complete inside on the man called the Wolf and the Western Railroads.
What's that?
You heard me. Do you want that story?
Do I want it? Well, I should say I do. But look here.
I think I could get it for you, Mr. White.
What do you know about the Wolf?
A little bit.
Where did you ever hear his name?
In connection with railroads, Mr. White.
Oh, stop beating around the bush. I only heard the beginning of that myself yesterday morning. Not a paper in the country has carried a line.
And yet I come in here and talk about it. I think I could do something with it, Mr. White.
Now, look here, Kent. Mysterious secret messages have threatened to tie up every railroad in the country, beginning with the Western. For a while, the road paid no attention, and then the crack flyer on the P&R went off a bridge.
Yes, I read about that.
Yeah, naturally. But you didn't read about the warnings because they weren't printed.
Weren't printed?
No, and they won't be. Not until we've checked all the angles. And then this man, the Wolf.
Oh, yes, yes, the Wolf.
Now, where do you come in? How did you get to know the Wolf? Excuse me. Say your own, White.
My friend, tomorrow night, the Silver Clipper leaves Denver for the West. It will not arrive in Salt Lake City.
Hey, what's that? Who's this?
I have been called the Wolf. Goodbye.
Hey, come back here. Come back here. Wait, wait.
Yes, Mr. White?
Where did that call come from?
I'm sorry, sir. The party's been disconnected.
Ah, nuts.
I beg your pardon, sir, but if that call did come from the Wolf, I should be inclined to believe it.
Huh? How do you know who that was?
If I were you, I'd warn the officials in charge of the Silver Clipper.
Look here. You couldn't hear that phone. What is this? How do you know who called me?
As I was saying, Mr. White, suppose I brought you a good story, a really good story. The story of the Silver Clipper and the Wolf.
I take chances, Kent. I'm going to take a chance on you.
Thank you, Mr. White.
It's 2,000 miles. You'll have to hop a plane.
I'll get there, Mr. White, in spite of the weather.
Lord, I hadn't noticed the weather. Well, get to the airport anyway.
You rang, Mr. White?
Miss Smith, this is Clark Kent, temporarily attached to our staff. You'll note I said temporarily.
Yes, sir.
Kent leaves for the West by the first plane. Get him tickets and a $200 advance.
Mr. White, all planes are grounded.
Well, that's all right, sir. I'll get there.
Take him outside. Show him what he needs to know.
Mr. White, I'd like to thank you.
Oh, let it go, Kent. Let it go. You get a story and you get a job. You're either clairvoyant or the luckiest guesser alive. Either way, I can use you. But if you miss out, well...
This way, Mr. Kent.
Thank you, Miss Smith. Nice of you to show me around.
Pretty lucky, I'll say. 100 good newspaper men walking the streets and you step right into a job.
I say, I am lucky.
You wait in here. It's the anteroom of the cashier's office.
Well, I really don't need an advance.
Oh, playboy in disguise, eh? Wait here.
Oh, what a rotten night.
Don't fall out that window. It's 20 stories down.
Beautiful view, even in the fog.
You wait right here till I get your money. Then I'll introduce you to a few real newspaper men.
Planes grounded. 2,000 miles to go. Sorry, Miss Smith. I'm afraid I can't wait. Clark Kent may need a plane, but Superman doesn't. Up with the window. And out.
Kent, I hope I didn't keep you waiting to...
Miss Smith.
What is it?
Miss Smith.
Huh? What's wrong?
That man. Did he go out, that Clark Kent?
Nobody went through the city room.
No.
He didn't go out? Well, I left him right here. The window. Oh, the open window. He went through it and it's 20 stories down.
He went out of the window.
Out the open window, 20 stories above the ground. In the wink of an eye, Clark Kent, cub reporter for the Daily Planet, becomes Superman, eagle of the sky, winging his way west over city and plain, river and mountain, through the storm-swept night. But will he be in time? Can he checkmate the strange figure called the Wolf, discover the plot, save the Silver Clipper, roaring toward Denver at 90 miles an hour? And remember, don't miss the next installment of Superman.
Up in the sky. Look, it's a bird.
It's a plane.
It's Superman.
Superman is a copyright.
second adventure of Superman. Again, I don't have much information on that. I just know the series started in 1940, the radio series, because the comic was developed in 1937 or 38. First picked up on a newspaper strip, and then their radio drama around 1940. Last half of the show, because my CD broke with my program, and I've been to Gunsmoke for the second half. I went to the archive here, the studio, picked up a Fat Man. My apologies for any regular listeners that have already heard this. I don't have any information on it, really, except it stars J. Scott Smart and premiered in January 1946. Fat Man. Thanks.
Don't add to the upset. Take soothing Pepto-Bismol and feel good again.
There he goes, into that drugstore. He's stepping on the scale. Weight, 237 pounds. Fortune, danger. Who is it?
The Fat Man.
The Norwich Pharmacal Company, makers of Pepto-Bismol, Unguentine, and other fine drug products, brings you the adventures of Dashiell Hammett's fascinating and exciting character, the Fat Man, a fast-moving criminologist who tips the scales at 237 pounds. Tonight's adventure, starring J. Scott Smart in Murder Plays Hide and Seek. And now, from New York, Pepto-Bismol brings you the Fat Man.
The housing shortage may be bad, but there's one place I know of that always has room for another tenant. It's a big gray structure near the river, and the windows are crossed with iron bars, and the landlord never asks you for a penny in rent. If you're an extra special customer, they even give you a private suite in a secluded part of the building that leads directly to a room with a heavy chair. That room is reserved for the guys who find out that they can't get away with murder.
The Fat Man learned his business the hard way. But there's an easy way to care for an upset stomach. Just don't overdose with antacids or physics. Instead, take Pepto-Bismol, the gentle way to help settle and sweeten the stomach quickly. Pepto-Bismol calms and quiets the disturbance by spreading a soothing protective coating on irritated stomach and intestinal walls. You begin to lose that queasy, uneasy feeling right away. The next time careless eating or overindulgence gives you acid stomach, nervous indigestion, or heartburn, you'll get quick relief if you remember this. When your stomach's upset, don't add to the upset. Take soothing Pepto-Bismol and feel good again. Now, the Fat Man in Murder Plays Hide and Seek.
Inasmuch as eating is one habit I find very hard to break, I usually prefer my clients to have enough cash to pay for my work. In Andy Maroney's case, however, I made an exception to the rule. I've known Andy for quite a while, and I can guess what he earns driving that hack of his around from dusk to dawn. With a wife and three kids, you can't afford any fancy fees for a private detective. It was almost 3 a.m. when Andy knocked on my apartment door.
All right. All right. Keep your shirt on. I'm coming. Who is it?
It's Andy Maroney, Mr. Runyon. The hacky.
Well, what's on your mind, Andy?
I didn't do it. I swear I didn't do it. You gotta help me, see?
Now, take it easy, Andy.
I thought he was drunk when she asked me to take him home. I had nothing to do with it, Mr. Rinnian, so help me.
Now, will you calm down long enough to make some sense?
I'm talking about the stiff. The guy who was croaked.
What guy? Where is he?
Downstairs, in the back of my cab. For the love of Mike, will you hurry?
Well, you mind if I put some clothes on?
I'll lose my license. I'll lose my job and they'll put me in the cooler for 160 years.
Here, hand me those shoes.
You're a right guy, Mr. Runyon. Every hacky knows you're okay. You help me out of this and I'll pay you back if it takes the rest of my life.
Well, it's too long to wait. Put this one on the house. There we are. Now I'll get my coat and we'll be off. Okay, come on.
I got the hack parked in the front of the door. As soon as I saw the guy was dead, I made a beeline for your flat. I figured I could explain it better to you than I could to the cops.
You ever seen him before?
No. He was sitting in the back of my cab when I came out of the beanery. I only left the car parked for about 20 minutes while I got some sinkers and some java. A blonde dame standing by the cab handed me $5 to take him home, so I figured he was drunk.
Here, out this way.
There's a hack. He's flopped over in the rear seat.
What is this, Andy? A corny gag?
Holy smoke. The stiff is gone.
You must have been dreaming.
He was there, I tell you. On the level. He was sitting there in the back 5 minutes ago.
How do you know he was dead?
Because I shook him. I felt his pulse. There was blood coming out of his mouth.
Hey, wait a minute. What's this on the floor?
It's his hat. That's the hat the guy was wearing.
His initials are on the sweatband, CH. Where were you taking him, Andy? Did this blonde give you his address?
Yeah, but it turned out to be a phony. That's when I found out he was dead. I thought he'd passed out, and I tried to shake him into giving me his right house number.
Would you recognize the woman if you saw her again?
In a minute. She was a tall job, easy on the eyes. She was standing on the sidewalk next to my hack and wearing an evening gown.
You mean without a coat in this weather?
Well, come to think of it, she didn't have a coat.
Come on, get into this jalopy and let's get started.
Where are we going?
Back to the corner where you met your customer.
This is it, Mr. Runyon.
Yeah. What's that joint over there? Nightclub?
Yeah, the Venetian Blind. It's a fancy dump that gets the ermine crowd.
Well, if that blonde wasn't wearing a coat, she must have come out of there.
Well, it's almost 4 o'clock. The joint must be closed.
Well, we'll try it anyway.
Yeah, it's closed up like I said.
See anything through the glass in the door?
There's a light on in the hall. Wait a minute. A dame's coming out. No, it ain't the same one.
Oh, good evening.
I'm sorry. The club is closed for the night.
You work in here, miss?
Yes, I do.
This isn't a pickup. I'm just looking for information. Did you happen to see a good-looking, tall, blonde woman?
She was wearing a silver evening dress an hour ago.
That sounds like Mrs. Rogers, the owner.
Is she inside?
Yes, I think so. What are you, a policeman?
What gives you that impression?
You act like one.
My name is Runyon. I'm a private detective. I've got a little business with your boss.
She's in her office, I imagine. Come inside and I'll show you where it is.
Thanks. Is everybody else going home for the night?
I guess so. I'm Peggy Dale. I sing with the orchestra.
Hey, Peggy!
Oh, I thought you'd gone, Frank.
I was waiting for you, baby. I hope maybe I could take you home. Who's this?
He's a private detective. His name is Runyon.
What's the matter? Something wrong?
That all depends. Who are you?
Frank Cooley. I handle the drums in the band. What's up?
We're looking for a stolen corpse.
You what?
Do either you two happen to know anyone with the initials C.H.?
Not me.
I know a woman named Hunt. Clarissa Hunt.
This particular C.H. is a man.
There she is, Mr. Runyon.
It's Mrs. Rogers.
What's going on here?
Are you sure she's the woman who handed you the fiver, Andy?
Positive, Mr. Runyon. You remember me, lady?
No.
Sure you remember. You asked me to take that drunk home, and you gave me a fine spot to do it.
I never saw you before in my life.
It's a frame. She's lying, I tell you.
Relax, Andy. Mrs. Rogers, You wouldn't be holding out on us by any chance, huh?
I don't know what you're talking about.
That drunk that Andy chauffeured for was dead. You wouldn't like to be mixed up in a murder rap, would you?
No.
Then how about a few details?
I don't know anything about a drunk or a dead man. I never saw this moron before.
Listen, you double-crossing hen. I ain't taking it in the neck for nobody.
Pipe down, Andy.
Mr. Runyon.
What's the matter?
Look, under that drape, near the window.
There's a guy's feet sticking out.
Stay where you are now, all three of you.
What? It's Charlie Haney.
And he's dead. Well, it looks like we've found our body, Andy.
Wait a minute, Mr. Runyon. That ain't the same guy who was in my cab.
Two hours later, I was in Lieutenant McKenzie's office at headquarters. The dawn was just about breaking, and I listened to Mac's autopsy report as I sipped a welcome container of steaming coffee.
Charlie Haney was poisoned, Brad. Stuff was slipped into a drink.
What about the blood on his mouth?
Poison they used was dynamite. Brought on a hemorrhage.
The guy in Andy's cab got his walking papers in the exact same way.
I don't know. I'm inclined to think that Charlie Haney and the guy in Maroney's hack were one and the same.
Why? Because the initials in the hat?
That's one reason. And Maroney admitted the back of his cab was dark when he looked at his passenger.
He's scared, Mac. He'll admit almost anything if he thought he'd save you a little trouble. Now, personally, I think we're dealing with two different killings. And both the victims have the same initials.
Then what happened to corpse number one?
Well, it's a cinch he didn't walk to a funeral partner to get himself registered.
Well, I question the girl, the musician, and Mrs. Rogers.
You got any dope?
Well, not much. Charlie Haney was a jack of all trades around the Venetian blind. Did odd jobs for Mrs. Rogers. Sometimes he'd throw out an obstreperous customer.
A bouncer, huh?
He was big enough.
Yeah, I'd say he was.
Well, in any case, I had nothing on him, so I let him loose. I might have held Mrs. Rogers on suspicion, but her battery of lawyers would have sprung her anyway.
What about Andy Maroney?
Well, he's in the clear so far. I'm letting him go back to his cab, but I'm padlocking the Venetian blind while the investigation goes on.
If you don't mind my saying so, Mac, that isn't a very smart move.
No? Why?
I think you'd be better off to keep the club open and give the killer a chance to show up again.
Look, Brad, I'm going to ask you for a favor.
Okay, shoot.
Lay off this case.
Why?
Well, first of all, your client's in the clear, so that's taken care of.
And secondly?
I won't buy your theory about two victims. And it's the kind of a thing that might confuse the investigation.
Sensitive, Mac?
Now, you know better than that. I'm just saying that your guesswork is cockeyed. And I'm going to have enough trouble solving the murder of one victim without searching for an imaginary corpse. Hello? Yes, McKenzie speaking. What? Oh. Yeah, I'll be right over. Here, Brad. Have a cigar.
You look as if you're giving away a prize.
I am. One of the motorcycle squad just picked up a dead man under the Queensboro Bridge. The initials on his wallet were C.H.
I rode over to the Queensboro Bridge with McKenzie and saw the body. It was identified by Andy as the guy he'd had in his cab, and a card in his wallet gave his name as Casper Hall. They took him back to the morgue for an autopsy, but I was pretty sure of what they'd find, so I drove back to my apartment to catch up with a few hours of sleep. It must have been 11 or 11:30 in the morning when I found myself with another guest. And this one was just as unexpected as the last. Yeah, just a second. One of these days, I'm liable to get myself some sleep.
Good morning, Mr. Runyon.
Well, good morning. Come in.
Thanks.
Sorry the room's in such a mess. I wasn't expecting company.
That's all right.
You're the gal I saw last night, the gal that sings the Venetian Blind.
That's right, Peggy Dale.
Cigarette, Peggy?
No, thank you.
Where are you going?
I want to look out the window. I had a feeling I was being followed.
Anybody there?
street's empty.
What's on your mind, sweetheart?
Before I tell you anything, I want to be sure you won't tell anybody I told you.
Oh, is it that hot?
It might be.
Okay, I'll play ball. Let's have it.
They're holding Mrs. Rogers at headquarters now.
Are they? Again?
When they found the man named Casper Hall, they took that taxi driver's word against hers about putting him into the cab.
Oh, yeah?
I was there when they questioned Mrs. Rogers. They questioned me as well. She finally admitted putting Hall into the cab. And her excuse was that she thought he was a drunk and she wanted to get rid of him so he wouldn't raise a fuss.
Well, that sounds logical to me.
But one thing she didn't tell them.
What's that?
That she'd seen and talked to Casper Hall before.
You knew that?
He's been in the Venetian blind a dozen times. And I've seen him at the same table with Mrs. Rogers.
Did you tell that to the lieutenant?
No.
Why not?
Because Mrs. Rogers would have heard me. I'm scared of her, Mr. Runyon. She's hard and she's mean. It's not only my job. I didn't want to end up the way poor Charlie did.
Well, I can't blame you for that.
She's been mixed up with gangsters and racketeers ever since she went into the nightclub business. I've seen some of them at the blind.
So you decided to spill the beans to me, hmm?
You can tell the lieutenant, but I don't want any part of it.
Okay, Peggy. Thanks for calling. Oh, by the way, is Mackenzie padlocking the club?
No. He was going to, but he changed his mind.
Will you be there tonight?
I guess so. Why?
I just wanted to ask you to save me a ringside table. The Venetian blind seems to have the most interesting floor show in town. I checked with Mackenzie and gave him the dope, but he couldn't hang on to Mrs. Rogers. He didn't have enough evidence to get an indictment yet. That meant Mrs. Rogers would be back in her club that night, and so would I. I got in touch with Andy Maroney, who showed up at my flat about 10, just as I was putting the finishing touches to the soup and fish. Sit down, Andy. Be with you in a minute.
Say, you look pretty slick in that outfit, Mr. Runyon.
Well, you said the Venetian blind catered to the ermine crowd, so I decided to get the dinner jacket out of mothballs.
You know, I was just thinking.
Yeah, what?
My uncle.
Yeah? What about your uncle?
He was buried in an outfit like that.
Stop being so cheerful. I intend to wear it vertically.
You want me to drive you over?
Yeah, that's why I called. There's something else I want you to do.
Anything you say.
When I go into that club, I want you to park outside and keep your eyes open. If I'm not out of there within 2 hours, get a hold of the police.
Expecting trouble?
I'm not expecting it, Andy. I'm looking forward to it. It had started to snow when we got down to the street. The night was crisp and cold. If I hadn't been so busy admiring the weather, I might have noticed that Andy's hack, which was standing in front of the door, was occupied once again.
Hello, Mr. Runyon.
Oh, what are you doing here, Cooley?
I want to talk to you.
Okay, move over. Drive straight to the Venetian blind, Andy.
Right. Don't drive to the blind. Let's go in the other direction.
Say, who's giving the orders around here?
I am.
Hey, he's got a gun.
Drive in the other direction, Andy, as the gentleman requests. I'd put that gun away, Frankie. Drums are safer to fool with.
I'll put it away when I'm good and ready.
Suit yourself.
And I'll be ready when I put a slug in you.
Been drinking?
That's none of your business.
It's funny how a pint of booze makes a lion out of a mouse.
I'll show you who's a mouse when we get out of town, fat man.
Mr. Runyon.
Keep driving, Andy.
Yeah. Keep on driving. Unless you want the top of your head opened up for ventilation.
Before you start popping that cannon, I hope you'll explain why you picked me for a target.
You know why.
Well, do I?
You should have had sense enough to keep out of this. You Weisenheimered yourself right onto a slab.
Who are you covering for, Frankie? Yourself?
Never mind the questions.
Because up to now, it was Mrs. Rogers who held my interest.
Mrs. Rogers?
Yeah. If you're covering for her, you're just wasting your time. By tomorrow morning, we'll have enough on your boss to get an indictment.
Pretty sure of yourself, aren't you?
Well, I was until you shoved that rod in my rib. Now I'm beginning to change my mind.
Yeah, so am I.
Really?
Stop this cab, mister.
There are lots of people in this section, Cooley. You're not going to risk any fireworks in a spot like this, are you?
Keep driving and don't look back. Go on, beat it.
For a minute, I thought he was going to knock the two of us off.
And so did I. But instead, he gave me a brand new angle.
There's a cop on the corner. Do you want to make a report?
Ah, forget it. I may have a much more interesting report to make to the cops later on. It was almost 11 when we got to the Venetian Blind. The place was pretty well crowded. The customers were dressed to kill, and most of the gals were flashing diamonds. Marcia Rogers' sucker list would have matched the social register. Instead of taking a table, I sat at the bar where the view was better. The floor show wasn't the only thing I wanted to see. Give me a rum and Coca-Cola.
You can put it on the house, Pete.
Thanks, but I like to buy my own.
I had a feeling you'd be back here tonight, fat man. I would have been disappointed if you didn't show.
You do a good business, don't you, Mrs. Rogers?
Not bad.
Found any corpses tonight?
Now, don't start trying to be funny. You're liable to find you've outstayed your welcome.
Still in your silver gown, huh? I thought you'd be wearing black.
For whom?
Casper Hall.
Casper didn't mean anything to me.
That's something you might have to prove. I was informed he spent a lot of time here.
So do my other customers.
Yeah, but they don't usually get picked up cold under the Queensborough Bridge.
The cops haven't got anything on me. They don't even have enough to close up my club.
That's where you're mistaken, Marcia.
Then why didn't they shut me up?
Because I asked them not to.
You?
Oh, don't get me wrong. I'm not getting philanthropic.
Then what's the big idea?
Well, maybe I like your entertainment. Oh, by the way, where's your regular drummer?
Cooley?
Yeah.
He quit.
Why?
Don't ask me. When a musician wants to leave, I don't call the FBI and check up on him.
I have a little surprise for you, sweetheart.
Have you?
I think I got this double murder partially solved.
You're a very smart boy.
When Casper Hall was poisoned, the killer didn't expect him to leave the club so soon. After he was helped out, Charlie Haney, your bouncer, was sent after his body.
What did he want the body for, a souvenir?
There must have been something Hall was carrying that the killer wanted. Charlie couldn't frisk him fast enough while he lay in the cab, so he snatched the body and ditched it under the bridge.
Then who killed Charlie Haney?
The one who killed Casper Hall. Charlie knew too much. He was just dumb enough to stick his neck out.
Then why don't you make an arrest?
Well, because I haven't put my hand on the murderer yet. How would you like to set yourself up for the candidate?
You're crazy.
You knew he was dying when you helped him into that cab. And don't hand me that drunk story. It doesn't gel.
I thought you said Casper got out of here too fast. Would I have pushed him into a cab and then sent Charlie after him?
No. That's why I'm crossing you off my list. But I still think you're holding out. And in case you don't know it, baby, an accomplice sits right on top of the killer's lap when they give him the chair.
Why should I hold out?
That's not the $64 question, sweetheart. The point is, why didn't you yell for the cops in the first place when you found Casper Hall 5 minutes from the grave? You want me to tell you why?
Yes.
Casper must have given you something when you put him in that cab. He gave you what the killer wanted and what Charlie Haney was sent out to get. Well, baby, how'm I doing?
You're doing fine. Come with me.
She took me to her office without another word, and I had the feeling my bluff was paying off in spades. The theory was a good one, and it accounted for everything that happened, but I couldn't prove it in 100 years if she'd wanted to call me on it. The office was dark when I opened the door, but I caught the sound of someone bumping into a chair as I stepped inside. Stand still, Mrs. Rogers. There's someone in this room, and I'm telling that someone now that I'll shoot to kill if I see anything move when the lights go on. Snap the switch, Mrs. Rogers.
Peggy!
I was just...
She's trying to get at my safe.
That's not true.
What do you got in your safe that's so important, Mrs. Rogers?
I'll show you in just a minute.
Now stand right there, Peggy, like a nice little girl.
Here, this is what Casper Hall gave me the night he died. There are slips of paper in this envelope, written in longhand. In the last few months, 6 of my customers were robbed after they left my place. Their names are on those slips. They were all held up on their way home, and the police never found the gunman.
There's more than just a name on each piece of paper. There's a description of a car, the license number, an address, and a list of jewelry.
Casper Hall was tipped off whenever an important customer made a reservation.
Those women used to come here loaded with jewelry. Someone must have gotten the information beforehand and then handed it to Casper outside on those strips of paper. Then all he had to do was follow the right car.
Would you know who that someone is, Peggy?
No.
Oh, now don't be coy, sweetheart. I had you tagged when your drummer boy, Frankie Cooley, wanted to take me for a ride. He was crazy enough about you to commit murder and keep you in the clear, Peggy. But he changed his mind when I told him I was after Mrs. Rogers.
Give me that envelope.
Oh, no, not so fast, baby. I'll need this myself for a while. We're going to do a little handwriting analysis.
He crossed me. The rat held out, and he used a...
Sorry about that. Well, it's going to bleed well beyond my time frame. That is Murder Plays Hide and Seek, The Fat Man series, credited with Dashiell Hammett from his novel The Thin Man. Its original air date was the 2nd of January, 1948. Dave Marco's up next. He's not here in the studios. Again, my apologies for the show today. My CD broke, so I had to play an alternate show, and the Fat Man would play well beyond my 7 minutes. Lo and behold, Marco just arrived. This is Arthur with the Grand Hour. Thanks for listening. I'm going to play... song by, I don't know if it's a Scott Joplin or if it's in tribute to Scott Joplin. I see he has a birthday this month. I think it's on Thanksgiving. So I'm just going to play something off of the computer here. Again, it's Arthur with the Grand Hour. Thanks for listening.